You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here. DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 to $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINTFORWARD. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code POINTFORWARD. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restriction terms and responsible gaming resources.
Point 4 is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
I saw it, but I didn't realize that we done with the 90s was such a big social media,
but the people
virality of it. I didn't know that was that viral.
Yeah, the people are like, we're done with the 90s, and you see people talking about it. I was like, you shut, like, bro, like, cars weren't lit back in the day neither. Like, it's the maturity of the game, you idiot. Like, I'm done with the 90s. I did it. Like, bro, that's so...
I thought it was just funny, a funny voice. Like, yeah. It was funny. I'm like, oh, no, y'all, for real. Y'all really think y'all really think MJ can't go left? Yeah. Oh, y'all that stupid.
No, when he sat there, I was like, man, this is why... Y'all banned TikTok yet? Like, that type of shit. It's like, man.
Point. Forward.
This is Andre Iguodala.
This is Evan Turner.
We're trying to get to the true essence of not just basketball, but life, and that means something.
It is like a finger pointing away to the moon. Don't concentrate on the finger or you will miss all that heavenly glory.
That level of understanding has been taken out of the game.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Point Forward Podcast. Myself, Andre Iguodala, being joined by my guy, Evan Turner.
Present.
Before we get started, make sure you subscribe and follow us everywhere you go to listen to your podcast, and make sure you follow us across all social media platforms at Point Forward.
Point Forward.
In today's episode, we're speaking to Malik Mack, Harvard's unstoppable freshman phenom who's turning heads and tearing up the college basketball scene. We'll also be talking about philanthropic work that Russell Westbrook is doing in his hometown of Los Angeles. Love, Russ. Beautiful. NCAA Selection Sunday and our brackets are right around the corner. You can get a few dollars from that. Curry Brand is signing University of South Carolina guard Malaysia Fuali.
Mm-hmm.
She got crazy game.
Yeah. OD.
OD. We'll also be talking about who is the face of the NBA.
Point. Forward.
As the season winds down, teams are starting to carve out their postseason futures. We are on the brink of what could be a bittersweet scenario for basketball fans. As of right now, the bottom four teams in the Western Conference final slotting consists of some of the game's greatest players, and those teams are the Mavericks, Suns, Lakers, and Warriors. These preseason favorites are now at risk to be fighting for their lives in the play-in game. We setting a play-in record this year on viewership?
I think so. Yeah, I might throw a party for that joint. the Lakers Warriors joint was crazy.
It was.
But then it was like bittersweet. Like, so you mean no staff? Like I was hurt. Like, bro, this shouldn't be legal, dog.
Yeah. Or no Bron, or no KD, or no Kyrie or Book. I mean,
Doncic.
And you said it before we spoke about this. You said, Dame said, Luka will find a way to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, he always said that. He's like, man, sometimes you'll sit at Luka. He said, I'll be over here struggling trying to get to the playoffs, and Luka in fourth or fifth place 2 weeks ahead. You know what I mean?
True story. So what,
what do you think, if you saw some matchups, and we're just talking hypothetical or whatever, say, how would they try to draw it up if a Luka went up against a Bron in this situation?
It's for one game.
For one game. Like, would it be a passing of the torch, quote unquote? Or would you want to see a rematch of the Suns Dallas? Would that be good for the NBA? Or would you know
Suns
I mean?
Dallas with Luka and
for one game take all the marbles?
No, with Luka and
Book.
Luka and Book have great history.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
In terms of them just battling,
Luka has great history because of Book. To be honest with you, G. And Book is one of my favorites. It's just certain stuff that he does that somehow Luka just trumps. Bro, the thing where he was like, y'all want to talk when y'all winning? And he came back and blew them smooth out.
So it's crazy. I saw this amazing thread. I think it was fake, but it was amazing. Of wide receivers. And it started off with one wide receiver. Was like, it was DK Metcalf.
Okay.
And he was going against a good corner.
Well, like Pat Surtain, the second?
I forgot which corner it was. And he made a tough catch, and he said something. Somebody said something about it. And DK was like, what you thought? Like, yeah, that sound about right. That's me. And so somebody else was like, oh, you sure? Like another receiver. Who's the receiver for the Bills? My man from the Bills, the receiver.
Diggs
was like, fam, you just... Yeah, just because you big don't mean you the best. He was like, yeah, okay. And so then my man, the Patrick Peterson, right? Is Patrick Peterson or Patterson?
Patterson is from the Raptors.
No,
it's Peterson.
No, Patrick Peterson from the Cardinals.
Yeah.
Was like, Jalen Ramsey's your dad. And so he was like, no, he ain't. And then Jalen Ramsey got into the chat. Like, they all entered the chat at different moments, like, stop it. No, I'm the best. No, I'm the best. No, I got something to say about that. But it got to Patrick Peterson saying, Jalen Ramsey is really your dad. He was like, no, he's not. Like, he checked his tone.
Yeah.
And then here comes Jalen Ramsey. Jalen Ramsey was like, but I really am. Check the tape. And then they just had all his receiving yards on games that they had matchups. Crazy. It was one of the coldest things I've ever seen. And so what you're saying right now is this is essentially Luka and Book.
Essentially. And then it's like the end of the season. So when you're talking as a guy in that position, what does that do for numbers? Like, you know what I mean? What does that do for numbers? Obviously, the play-in game could probably be the most viewed play-in game going forward.
True.
But the thing about the playoffs, from those teams alone, from the Mavs, you got Luka, you got Kyrie.
Mm-hmm.
From the Suns, you got KD, Brad, Bill, Devin Booker.
Yep.
For the Lakers, you got Bron, AD, and then for the Warriors, you got, you know, Steph Curry and the rest of the homies.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Aside from all the all-stars that are really on a team, like with the Lakers, D'Angelo Russell, who's playing unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, those type of levels, it's like, yo, to miss that type of talent.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting.
In April?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And so the DraftKings odds, the Suns' odds before the season, they were plus 550 to reach the NBA Finals. Not the playoffs, the Finals.
The Finals.
They were plus 270 to win the Western Conference Final and a plus 170 to win the Pacific Division. Listed at plus 900 to face the Bucks or Celtics in the NBA Finals. Here are the odds from the first day of the season and now. NBA champs on October 24th of 2023. They were a plus 650. Now, today, they are a plus 2,000. Huge difference. Western Conference champs on October 24th, they were plus 350. Now, they're a plus 950. Pacific Division champs odds, the DraftKings odds in October were plus 145. Now, they're a plus 2,200 as the Pacific Division champs. Who's leading the Pacific Division right now? Sac.
Damn, is that them?
Yeah. The Lakers, the Warriors, Phoenix, Clippers.
Nah,
I mean, the Clippers took a couple L's.
That's not the Pacific Division, is it?
Yes, it is.
But I was in the Pacific.
What you mean?
This how bogus that travel schedule was. It was all them teams in L.A. We be going to Memphis. And Minnesota. I think Minnesota's in the Pacific.
No, Minnesota's not in Pacific.
There's no way Minnesota's. Look up who's winning the Pacific Division.
Sacramento or the Clippers.
Bro, I don't think they're Pacific.
Who?
You know better. You might know better.
Who you don't think's in the Pacific?
I know they in the Pacific. I don't think that's a division. Pacific?
It is the Pacific Division.
You right.
Minnesota's in the Northwest.
Bro, I'm trying to tell you, G. Then Iowa's in the Northwest Division. Yeah. That makes complete sense. Never mind.
Denver.
All right. I'm sorry, G. I'm sorry.
Denver. Portland.
That makes sense. Minnesota? That makes sense. No, you have the Northwest. You're right. That's full of shit, though.
Whoever else over there.
Yeah, because them trips to Memphis and, like, Minnesota.
Memphis, four hours there, four hours back.
OKC, bro, that armpit. Like, you know what I mean?
It was like the Central Division.
It was just the Central Division. Yeah, you like, bro, I'm going to jump in my car and I'll meet y'all there. Like, you know what I mean? But isn't it crazy? Do you think the Suns can have a chance to actually win? Would that be kind of crazy? Would this be like...
I think KD's resume would be good for KD's resume.
For sure.
And then let me finish the DraftKings hypothetical odds for individual finals matchups.
Yeah.
These are, as of today, not preseason. Celtics Suns meeting the finals plus 1,800, 18-1 odds. And then the Suns Bucks meeting in the finals is a plus 4,100, 41-1 odds. Mm-hmm. So there it is. But, I mean, speaking of, it's funny because out of all those teams, like who to you realistically could get to the finals between Phoenix, Dallas, the Lakers, and the Warriors?
The Warriors. Bro, you can't. I can bet on Bron. I'm going to do that, all right?
No, I'm saying out of all those three, you saying the Warriors are the only team that you can see realistically get into the finals?
Yeah, bro.
Hmm.
That's how bad these fools were acting. Like, you understand what I'm saying? Like, I can only go, I'm not going against Steph, but like, it's not nothing bad. Like, I think the Lakers, obviously, you can't go against Bron, right? That's legit, but like, I just want to understand what the, like, Suns been hurt, but like, how?
Yeah.
And then when we talk about like just greatness and you compare, like, you know, even you say Bron or you compare Steph to when he's turned up and he lifts every voice, it's like, he might struggle, but he don't struggle like this.
Right, right.
You understand what I'm saying? It's like, but like, he got three full clips, like two full clips with him, KD. And sometimes it'd be like, Steph just really be out there, like, raising, going through kids' maturity, going through, like, people off the court issues, going through an ailing superstar, like a declining superstar, his up and down moments. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, you got real stuff over there, and just with them, it's like, granted, Brad Beal was hurt, but sometimes I just don't. This is alarming.
They can't get on the court at the same time in Phoenix, it feels like.
Yeah.
Because Book out now.
Yeah, it is crazy. I mean, it's just KD luck, bro. Same thing happened with the Nets. You know what I mean?
Very true.
Shortcuts, man. You can't shortcut.
Yeah.
Point. Forward.
The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. North Carolina listeners, don't forget DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code POINTFORWARD. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code POINTFORWARD. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restriction terms and responsible gaming resources.
Point Four is sponsored by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about DraftKings and all it has to offer throughout the show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Point Forward.
One thing that I saw recently, there hasn't been an American player that's won the league MVP in like 5 or 6 years, right? Mm-hmm.
The globalization of the game.
And when you break 5 or 6 years down, you start into a new decade.
Mm-hmm.
It no longer has become like, that's not a thing to like, wait, that's a real thing. Mm-hmm. Like, when we're sitting here, it's like, all right, not only is it might not be an American player, But then it's two or three that you're juggling, pause in between, that you're like, yo, who is it? Is it the reigning MVP Jokic? Mm-hmm. And is it his buddy Luka Doncic? Mm-hmm. Or is it Joel Embiid? I'm not going down in a grief for each year.
You talking about as the MVP or
just like face of the league, bro? Just like face of the league.
Oh, right now. Okay.
So you're sitting right there. Yeah. It's like you have, like, you look at Luka, he signed with Jordan. He's global. He's mm-hmm. leading the league in points, mm-hmm. all this and a third. Joel Embiid looks like the created player we used to create back in NBA 2K2.
True.
And then you look at Jokic. Like, we keep speaking about this and nobody brings it up. He just passed Jordan for all time PER.
Hmm.
That is crazy.
It's impressive. So You have to include the Greek freak, you know.
Absolutely.
He came off the championship. Shout out to Jrue Holiday. He came off the championship, and you see what he's doing now with his production company with Jay Will from Duke.
I saw that, yeah.
And he's got the partnership with WhatsApp.
Did he?
Yeah, he's got a big I keep seeing WhatsApp commercials. I never seen so many WhatsApp commercials.
Good for WhatsApp.
He had a documentary, I think, surrounding that. Then he did a movie. No, the WhatsApp like content is separate from the movie that he did. He did like the Disney movie about him and his brothers.
And his life. That was pretty dope.
Yeah.
When I did my little trip to Sedona, the wife of the WhatsApp creator was there.
Oh.
Yeah, so she was with me the whole time. She's a cool lady. Up? Nice lady. Mm. Random WhatsApp story. But
they undersold WhatsApp, did they?
I mean, anything worth it. Is it ever undersold when it's a bunch of money?
Never.
Yeah, you take that, you flip that, then you flip that again, and you take that back, and you flip that, then you keep going. But anyway, I heard a conversation you had right before the All-Star game, mm-hmm. which is why it brought me to this, topic of it was you spoke to the players and you're like, yo, take advantage of the game. Like, it's on you to carry this game forward. Mm-hmm. You guys have to be owners of this game. This is your league.
Right.
And when it comes down to discussing the league, American-wise or just player-wise, you oftentimes, I remember Andre Bargnani. He was the number one pick. He would just get his bread and just go back overseas.
Right.
And I remember people would be begging, like, how come we don't know him so well?
Right.
Or why don't we? Obviously, Ya was kind of promoted as well, mm-hmm. but we didn't know them on a personal level, mm-hmm. more so than anything else. And I feel as though that one of your narratives and messages has been like, no, that's your responsibility to the NBA. If you're going to be the best player here, you have to be paws open. You have to be, literally always available to be on that of a Michael Jordan, that of a LeBron James, or even you look at Jason Tatum. You turn on the TV all the time, he's there. He just had a crazy interview, and he told me personally where I'm like, yo, you saying out tomorrow you're doing this, and he literally was like, I never sit out on the road. And I'm like, why? It's like, because people paying to see JT. But it was funny, but it was just the truth. He didn't tell me this to brag. He told me this, and I'm sitting there like, no, dog. As a person who looked up to Jordan, I appreciate mm-hmm. you taking the game in serious.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure. And that's what I was speaking to. Steph's just turned 36.
Mm-hmm.
He's carried a torch. He's one of those who has gone so far beyond serving the game.
Yeah.
And it's I always say your duty, I live by this mantra. Once you've mastered something, it's your duty to go back and teach it. You gotta hold it down in some capacity. Bron's held it down one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
It comes with a burden. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You gotta have something wrong with you to hold that burden.
Yeah.
MJ had the gambling. Kobe was a cold-blooded killer. Bron had to handle. Bron's been holding down a torch for too long. It was almost it was a burden. We put another burden on him. He already held it down. Yeah. Steph's been incredible.
They said something that the more and more accolades that Bron and records that he breaks, it makes Steph Curry look that much more impressive.
True story.
Which is crazy.
True story.
To really say
true
that.
Story. And then I'm even putting Kevin Durant in that breath. Because he loves playing basketball so much, but it's just we're getting to the point where we're bothering guys who are going above and beyond for us. Because KD has gone above and beyond.
And also, too, it's like what Dre said, some of these dudes are moonwalking through a battlefield, dog. KD, he'll be going through all this. Then he's still averaging 28. what?
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Or Steph might just go like savage time, and you're like, bro, this is a different type level where like
36.
Yeah, we're he's doing it for us, bro, because Buddy worth like 500 and some, all his homies, and started riding off towards the hill. He like, what I'm doing it for, you know?
Right, right. Go ahead. Yeah,
but then you talk about those past faces and like how they stepped up and what they understood, mm-hmm. and even the battles just rising up every single time. Mm-hmm. Now it's kind of more serious where we'll sit down and it's like you hear some of the best players be like, well, you know, I don't really care about this. I don't really care about that. It's like, no, that you have to care. Yeah. Like, you're really setting a tone. Like we're sitting down and it's like a Luka, like Draymond. It's like, well, Luka will never try an all-star game setting. Or trying this way. That's setting a tone of how people play, mm-hmm. think. Like, mm-hmm. when Steph was the best player in the world, every kid you meet now shoot 48 feet out. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? And that's really setting a tone and a narrative of, like you always say, leave the game better than when you found it.
And I was just watching some videos on Luka's step back, where he stepped back, but his feet aren't really leaving the ground, so it's a step back shift. Get back to between the legs if you cut off the step back, which is an amazing move.
Because if he goes left, he's stepping back. Yeah. For sure. He go right, he's driving already.
He's stepping back, and his left foot is rocking off on the outside of his foot, and then he's getting back between the legs, getting back to his right.
Yeah.
And so they're watching him closely, but I'm saying all that to say, like, and I even put Dame in that same breath where Dame held it down. Dame did what he's supposed to do because you knew you were going into battle every time you saw him. Yeah. And it's just raising the level of play. That responsibility is a big part of it. And it's no matter where you go. You can be at the park. It could be summertime. I remember going back to lockout, and you remember the lockout games.
Yeah. That was like, crazy.
It got so crazy. You had some dudes ducking some other dudes, you know? And so I'm saying that's heavy is the head. That's what I always say. Heavy is the head that wears the crown.
And they got to see you, bro. It's a big deal for people to see you.
It's a big deal for people to see you. I did have a brief conversation with Luka, and he was like, yeah, I'm definitely got to do more, and I'm doing more. So it was like, okay, like, I think these guys are starting to understand it. They're starting to get it. And it's just a part of it. Like, the faces now, like, the next crop that are, like, in their prime faces, like you said, it's Luka, it's Jokic, it's Embiid, it's Giannis. And so those guys are just right there right now. And, you know, it's interesting to see Joker switch out his Nike deal. You know, Nike never really gave that much love to big men. Like, it was always hard for big men to sell shoes. So, you know, as a big...
Especially during the, the Sabrina Ionescu era. Nike only putting out one shoe right now.
but it's interesting because, it's like, as a big, it's hard to break through that arena of sneakers.
Yeah.
Like, how many bigs have actually been able to have success in selling a shoe? Shaq.
Yeah,
but he was like a whole character came with that.
Yeah,
like
for sure.
He was just who he naturally was. You know, he was doing movies. He was rapping.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, they, you know, how do you be more relatable as a freak of nature?
Yeah, that is crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Like, no one's ever really broken that down.
But before Greg Oden got hurt, I thought he would have been the next. One of the best commercials ever was a Greg Oden I don't know if it's an ESPN commercial, but he's talking about it. He's like, I know big men aren't as marketable, but I'm a chameleon. And they showed him like in eight different like forms with just a face like this. You know? But like, one thing I say when you talk about the face in the NBA, do you think it's like a conspiracy theory when people are always like, no, the league can't last if Americans not a face in the NBA? Like, American basketball needs Americans to be the face of the NBA, or it's just going to crumble. Along with like the style of play, do you ever hear that? It's like
interesting. I never really hear about that.
That's what I said.
As much.
Yeah, like, y'all don't have natural swagger, then how the hell like don't nobody want to be like you?
That's what makes
you great. It's part of your trends. Like, you understand what I'm saying? It's part of like what you're able to, you know what I mean, able to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the crop like that's coming right after those guys, and you know JT is right there, obviously. Then you got the young boys, and there's two of them.
Yeah.
It's Shea, and it's AE.
Yeah, I mean, Shea is Canadian, but...
Well, that's the interesting part, because some guys just move like you would think they're an American.
Yeah.
And I think we forget Shea is Canadian.
No, for sure, until you hear them talk, then you'd be like,
I mean, it's a bunch of them like that. You forget Wiggs.
Yeah, Devin Booker. I mean Dylan Brooks.
Well, Devin Booker as well. We haven't mentioned him, but it's a bunch of guys from Canada. I mean, Jamal Murray
is another
Canadian. Like they having a crazy Lou Dort. Amazing moment right
Kelly
now.
Kelly Olynyk. It's a lot of good people.
I mean, but then you got Wimby.
Yeah.
They talking about, you know, we heard what he said.
Yeah, you said.
He said, Rudy, you got one more year for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, he talking crazy for real. Yeah, well, wow, damn, geez, is it going to be a reign of terror? Like, what you know? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even last night, he was just like, yo.
And he cleaned it up for game.
Yeah, and he said, I'm not even at the level, I'm not even at my best yet.
Yeah.
My guy, Zach Collins, has said, he's like, one thing about Wimby, he's really in tune of who he is, and he understands the bigger picture. Yeah. So it's like, there is no foolishness that he comprehends, like, damn, I'm supposed to be better than Bron, like, type stuff. So it's going to be a fun time, a fun year. I think one thing as fans that we always appreciated, even when you brought up Shaq, was like, even though you didn't know him, you always felt like Shaq or, you know, Magic and some of those old players always came back in the screen and like talk to you and touch you.
Yeah.
And make you believe you're going to the NBA. Even though they had no clue who you were, like you grew up and say, like, bro, I know Shaq.
Yeah.
I personally know him, like understand, like, I'm gonna do this on, I'm gonna do that. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, so I think that really matters.
Point forward.
Hey there, it's Matt Norlander with the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. And yes, we are in the thick of the college hoop season. Our pod runs at least 3 times a week and covers everything you need to know, from the power conference team to the mid-majors, the scoops, the stories, game predictions, previews, huge recaps, everything. We cover it all. To find us, search Eye on College Basketball podcast wherever you get your pods.
In today's episode, we're speaking to Malik Mack, Harvard's unstoppable freshman phenom who's turning heads and tearing up the college basketball scene. Without further ado, here's our conversation with Malik.
Point forward.
We have a very, very special guest, a kid I'm a big fan of. I was watching TV back in like the fall, and I'm like, I'm watching Harvard. Always been a big Harvard fan because of Tommy Amaker. I see a young kid with dreads and tatted up, and I'm like, oh, okay, he passed the admissions test. Like, I'm into that. Let's see how you hooping. And Shorty was just going crazy, bro. And I just remember from November, you know, back to now, it's like, yo, I for sure want to get this kid on a pod. And, you know, just following his development just his year. Average 18 a game, was 4 or 5-time, you know, Ivy League player of the week. You know, they made a lot of headlines this year with their battles against Princeton. Him and Xavier Lee were rated as, you know, some of the top guards in the Ivy League. But one thing that really stood out to me about this kid was like, yo, he has, you know, Big Five conference type talent. It's not just Ivy League type talent, but I just want to always figure out what his story was. And we're lucky enough to have the young man on the show today, you know, Malik Mack from hailing from D.C. and a starting point guard, phenom point guard out of Harvard University. Welcome to the show, Malik.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me. Sure.
No doubt. So, Malik, a lot of people obviously don't know you outside of, you know, the college sport right now. It's kind of like your introduction, since you're still making your name. But tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, who you are, where you come from, in your own words.
Yeah, I'm from Auburn Hill, Maryland, right outside of Washington, D.C., probably like 5 minutes. PG County, I'm pretty sure y'all know about that.
Yep. Something in the water, right?
Yeah, for sure. Went to high school in St. John's College High School in D.C. I didn't have too many offers. I had a couple of good mid-major looks. But then at Harvard just stood out the most. Coach Amaker was my guy. He showed me love from day one. And then he never lied to me as well. He kept it 100% honest with me. So that's how I ended up at Harvard. I just felt like I could trust him the most.
You talked about PG County, and we spoke a little bit about all the talent that came from there. What's it like growing up in that area? And when, you know, KD made the movie Something in the Water, like, is that quote-unquote like the basketball city or the basketball town? You guys try to claim it, but what's the game like growing up?
It's very competitive. I mean, every time you step in the gym, it's gonna be some big dogs in the gym, so you got to be ready to play. Last summer, a lot of times when I'm in the gym, you just see guys like Quinn Cook, or you'll see Jerry Grant in the gym. Like, everybody's working. Everybody come back home to work. So growing up in PG County is just always, it's like a dog-eat-dog world. Like, you're always going to play against the top guys.
So who was the, what was the AAU scene like for you coming up in D.C.? And was there ever conversations around, like, it's cool to go to Ivy League school. Because, like, now that I'm 40 years old and, like, now that I'm older, it's like we want our kids to go to, to Harvard. You know what I mean? But when you're 15, 16, 17 years old, it's not looked at as the cool thing. And so, you know, what was AAU like for you? You said you didn't get, you know, too many looks outside of mid-majors. But what was that conversation like in terms of, like, were you talking about, like, going to an Ivy League school coming from the background that you came from?
Definitely not. It wasn't something I thought I'd end up doing. I played with Team Takeover, and our team was stacked. I actually came off the bench. I started a couple of games, but I came off the bench. We had a lot of guys. We had two kids going to Duke. We got a kid at Maryland, another kid going to UConn. So my team was really loaded, so I didn't have to do too much. So I feel like I kind of got overlooked in that sense. But, yeah, I didn't really think the Ivy League was something I wanted to do. Even leading up to my decision, I was kind of hesitant to go to Harvard because of, like, the Ivy League and the rules that come with it and things like that. And then especially where I come from, PG County, like, ain't too many guys going to Ivy League schools. So it was something I was hesitant about, but Coach Amaker, he made me believe, and so I decided to come here.
Well, how did he make you believe, you know, to be able to come into that environment? Besides, you know, PG County or D.C. kind of being Chocolate City, that's a whole different demographic. But then showing up to not only having to compete, but to compete, you know, in one of the craziest academic environments in the world. How did Coach Amaker sell you on that, and how did you kind of keep it, you know, within reach and believe you could do it?
Well, first, I kind of look at the players he had before me. So guys like Bryce Aiken.
Yeah.
I seen how he let them play. Siani Chambers, he let him play as well. So I knew he was a good guard coach.
Wesley Saunders. He was good.
Oh, yeah,
Wesley
for sure.
Saunders, yeah. Good hoop. Yeah. Seth Towns. Yeah. Yeah, they could go.
So he had a lot of good players come through. And he believed in me from day one. Like, he just always, he saw things in my game I necessarily didn't see myself. And on the school side of things, I always was fine in the classroom. I knew how to push myself. I knew how to use my resources. So I felt like coming to Harvard would definitely be a challenge. But if I just worked hard at it, like I've been doing my whole life, then I'll be able to adapt.
Yeah, your game has been described, you know, by a bunch of folks as mature beyond your years. And you know, I was watching a few of your highlights and just seeing kind of how you move around the court, you know, finishing with both hands, getting to the paint, you know, slow to fast pace,
mm-hmm.
you know, fast to slow pace, and just being able to mix it up. And there's a lot of maturity that comes from that. And, you know, where does that come from? And how's your mindset helped you, you know, navigate life as a, you know, now that you're considered like a big fish in a small pond?
I would say my game kind of came from playing against other good players. Like, I was never the fastest guard. I never was the strongest guard, but I could always shoot. And a lot of people just said I play, like, real smooth. So I try to use that to my advantage. Playing against guards that had did different things better than I did just kind of made me adapt. And then also playing against older guys. Like, I got two older brothers. I'd go outside and play versus them. And so I had to learn different ways to score or different styles of offense, whether to get better players the ball or things like that. So I feel like that's how I developed my game, just playing against older guys and then playing against guys who had different skill sets than me.
Well, arriving to Harvard your first day or first week, what was that like? You go from, you know, it's one thing being a student athlete, but it's another thing being a black student athlete mm-hmm. on that campus. What has your time been there? How has that, like, shaped you since you, you know, arrived on campus? What's been the ups and downs and, like, just the natural adjustments?
Yeah, when I first got here, it was rough. It was just different. Like, it was totally different. The people were different. It wasn't what I was used to based on where I come from. So it was very different. But I feel like growing up, I always had a good way of adapting with people. Even the high school I went to, it wasn't necessarily filled with kids from PG County. It was kids from all different backgrounds. So I was always able to adapt. And when I got here, I mean, the first couple of months was actually rough. But once I was able to adjust, find my niche, find a good friend group, it just became easy sailing for me.
What's been the toughest part of, like, adjustment? Has it been, like, the competitive nature, just being like, yo, I'm here to be a student. Like, I deserve to be in here. Has there been any stereotypes you hit or having to deal with? Or somebody double-checking? Dre has a story of when a teacher double-checked and he had to prove that he's supposed to be in AP classes. You know what I mean? Like if they see you now, you like you dread it up, got attached. You're like, nah, dog, I don't go to BC. I go to Harvard.
Yeah. I never really had the experience that I feel like everybody here is special and unique in their own way. So when I come into the classroom, it's like, I mean, they almost expect to see at least one person who look like me. So I feel like that's the main thing.
And I know recently, you know, we've heard talk about, you know, what's happened with the president there, the DEI situation that's been going on. I'm in the tech world, so, you know, always keeping a close ear to the ground just on, you know, all types of things going on across America. Have y'all had the discussions as a basketball team or on campus? You know, I was just there not too long ago speaking to the Black Coalition of students there. Had a great talk with them, and a few of them spoke about it. But has that affected you in any way, or has it opened your eyes to, you know, new worlds or new people you never really experienced before?
Yeah, it definitely opened my eyes. One big thing that was going on here was the Israel and Palestine conflict. It was a lot of protests going on. So I wasn't too educated on what was going on between those two. And my teammate shares a building with the kid who's from Palestine. So it was great to talk to that person and kind of figure out the conflict that's going on between them two. And then, but yeah, it's been rough, you know. A lot of people protesting, a lot of people with different views. So just navigating that, Coach Amaker has been doing a great job with us to make sure we're not involving ourselves in the wrong things, but still giving us the freedom to say what we believe in and to do what we believe in. So from that aspect, I feel like it's been a great experience, but it's also been something that's been life-changing in the way I view things, for sure.
And that leads me to the next question. You speak on just, you know, having the opportunity to see so many different things that, you know, I think that most of us, you know, don't get access to. And we talk about that all the time. You know, the kind of the thesis of our show, Point Forward, is just giving access to those who, you know, the worlds that we exist in and kind of bringing it back, teaching them and guiding them through it. And so for you, you know, how do you see yourself in terms of being a role model, coming from the background you come from, but then having access to the education that you have access to, and just being a representative for other Black students and athletes, you know, within your school and outside?
I feel like I have a big responsibility almost. It's like a lot of people, especially if you come from where I come from, a lot of people don't really care about school, or a lot of people are dumbing themselves down to fit in with the crowd. And I feel like something my dad instilled in me from an early age was like, all right, it's cool to be smart. Like, he was a smart person himself, but, you know, caught up in the environment, he kind of dumbed himself down and does what he does. Both of my brothers, too, they were both two very smart people, but caught up in the environment, same thing, kind of dumbing themselves down to do what their friends are doing or do what other people in the environment are doing. So he always just taught me, like, it was cool to be different. It was cool to be smart and to embrace it. And he always taught me to be competitive, like, be the best on the court and then be the best in the classroom. Like, so that was something I always carried, and I feel like that's something I show to the younger generation and the people who look up to me, that it's cool to be in the classroom. And then also, you can have tattoos, you can have dreadlocks, but you can also be in the classroom with someone who's going to change the world, or you might be the person who changed the world. So I feel like that's my biggest responsibility right now.
And then when you talk about the responsibility, carrying that, where do you see it taken into for, like, your platform? You look at guys like Dre, he went from being an NBA champion to being the head of the union. Like, is there anything where you say, like, yo, I want to continue, and you hear a lot of these young athletes, they set their platform to really change and keep innovating and keep pushing the game forward. And you're at one of the institutions where they're great at that. Where do you want to take this to your platform? And is it? Are you locked in? A lot of times the talent you have, there's a lot of people that try to come steal you away, take you to a Big Five school, and, you know, that Harvard platform is a little bit different, you know?
Yeah, I haven't really decided what I wanted to do with my with myself being here at Harvard. Something me and my brother had talked about was a lofty expectation, lofty goal, was that we want to build a school. You know what I'm saying? That's something I want to do in my future, like when I'm a lot older than what I am now. I say that because in my life I had some great teachers who kept me going and kept me motivated in school and in my athletic career. And so I feel like that's something that we need in our community, is just better schooling, better teaching, and more guidance. Because I feel like a lot of people could be where I'm at. They went down the wrong path. Or a lot of my friends, or even my little cousin who passed away recently, like, a lot of people just go down the wrong path. So I feel like that's something I want to do with my career, is to be able to build a school and teach these kids that it's something better out here than just being an athlete or being in the streets. I feel like it's something better. And that's getting your education and learning different ways to make money in this world. Like, it's not only two ways to make money in this world. There's a lot of different ways you could do it. And there's a lot of different ways you could be successful, even if you don't make the most money. So I feel like that's something I really want to do.
And I think that speaks to just being impactful. You know, I think that word isn't spoke up enough. You know, like, how can I bring the most impact to my people? You know, teachers probably are the most impactful per dollar than any other profession, maybe in the world. And in saying that, you know, how have you been able to balance it all? You know, condolences to you and the family on the loss of your cousin. You know, you dealt with that, still came bounce back and still playing well, producing. But then, you know, being in the classroom, having to do your work, and then, you know, obviously playing ball. And so I was just saw something the other day. I stole it and told it to my son. He was back home, and he wanted to hang out. And I had to make sure he got his workout in. Like, you going to work out today? But it was from Rick Brunson and Jalen. And Rick Brunson told Jalen, there's school, there's ball, and there's social life. You can only have two. Can't have all three. And I was able to use that in, like, real life. Like, hey, man, what are we doing? Like, you only get two of the three. And so we ended up having a crazy good workout. But for you, how are you able to balance it all? And you know, what advice could you give young athletes in terms of having right balance so they are able to take care of their schoolwork? Because I think we're in a phase now where everyone thinks they're going pro, and we're leaving a lot at the table in terms of, like, the access to the things that we can use basketball to get us there.
Yeah, and I feel like I balance it. I'm not sure. It's a tough question to answer, but I feel like one thing that was instilled in me early on was my mom. She ain't really let me go to practice unless I had my work done.
Bingo.
So that's something I still carry with me today. Is I try to get my work done before I even touch the bar, before I touch the weights. And even, like, say we have practice, if we haven't had practice midday and I do have work that I haven't done, I just make sure I get it done. There's nothing wrong with getting your work done. There's nothing wrong with being on top of your work. And it's just something you can carry on in your life. Like, you're going to have deadlines that you have to meet. And no matter what you got going on, you have to meet them. And going back on the what Rick Marshall said about the three things, I mean, of course, you're going to have moments where you hear and you have fear of missing out. Like, that's one thing I deal with a lot, is fear of missing out. A lot of my friends go to HBCUs, and they show me, like, it's lit, it's fun. You know what I'm saying? But I'm up here, and I'm in my books, but I feel like it's just, like, it's sacrifice, you know? Mm-hmm. If you want to get to where you say you want to go, you're going to have to sacrifice sometimes. It's always going to be there. It's what people always tell me. Like, it's always going to be there. And when I go home, it's still there. So it's like, it's nothing changing. So sacrificing that social life is something that's big and something that you're going to have to do if you want to be successful. So I just look at it from that perspective. And if I'm not doing work, I'm trying to do work in the gym, and I'm trying to lift, or I'm watching film. I'm doing something to get better at the game, which is something that I love to do. So if it's not helping me get better at the game or helping me improve my life, whether off the court, then it's irrelevant.
We talked earlier about how, you know, guards like yourself, Xavier Lee, we talked about former guards like Wesley Saunders, Jeremy Lin. You know, a lot of great guards came out of the Ivy League. And right now, you know, you're looking, you look when certain players go to Ivy League, there's a lot of rules and, you know, stipulations that kind of stop guys from going there. Just a couple years ago, you guys were just allowed to start getting scholarships, correct?
No, we still don't have.
Damn, y'all still don't have. So what was that is crazy. All right. So what would you like to see, you know, implemented moving forward? You know, not only in order to help, like, the black athlete, but just to help more athletes get into Ivy League and make it, like, a crazier, you know, make the league really cracking, you know, at a high level.
Something I like to see the Ivy League implement is having scholarships. I feel like that's the main thing. Like, a lot of people don't come to Ivy League schools because they don't have the ability to pay for school, or they don't know what scholarship to get in order to fund their schooling. So that was something that made me hesitant as well. I told Coach Amaker before he got me here, I was like, I would have been committed here if I knew what was going on financially, everything was straight. So I feel like that's the main thing they could fix for sure.
Can you break down what's that like? Like when you accept and say, yo, I'm going here to Harvard, most of us, we get, you know, we got to go through clearinghouse and we get our scholarship and all that Pell Grant nonsense. Like how, what's the, you know, what's the rate like that in order to get the tuition going down? Like how do you go about that? What's the financial aid and, you know?
Okay, for me, I still had to, well, I feel like everybody in Ivy League, they still have to do the application process.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to write your papers and answer the questions that they give. And financial aid, you can get scholarships based off of, you know, there's a lot of different scholarships out here. I'm not sure about any specific scholarship, but just like a regular student, you're basically a regular student here, like, and that's how they treat you, so... you're a regular student, honestly, like, you don't get the same benefits as everybody else at Division I school. So basically, like, you pay your school through your financial aid, and it's based off of, like, your parents' salaries and things like that.
Yeah, because what's the average parent's salary at Harvard? Is it B's?
Yeah, I think so. It's 1%, right?
Yeah, 99% is the 1%.
And what's crazy, that endowment, what's so crazy that people complain about, it's like the endowment is like billions at Harvard. So when you sit there, it's like, man, like y'all facility is nice, but you go to the gym at the business school, it's got like 7 courts over there. And like, you know, some of these, I once asked somebody, yo, where's the basketball arena? People didn't even know at one point. I'm like, damn, you that smart? Like, you have no clue where the basketball arena is.
Check out the ERC, the Enterprise Resource Center. It's being built on campus right now. It's the first minority-owned real estate property at Ivy League school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Kyle Lowry.
We might have to get an NIL deal or something going in, bro.
Yeah, so, I'm going to look into that for sure. Yeah,
so we built that. So we did it with Teachman Spire. It was the first minority-led real estate project at Ivy League school.
That's big time.
Yeah. So we they in the dirt right now, and I'm looking forward to it. But, you know, as far as, like, how far you've come, you know, you're finishing up your first year there. What advice would you give other, you know, student athletes in high school in terms of, like, aiming to pursue a higher education with athletic excellence and pursuing just the Ivy League institutions? I would say HBCUs as well. But what advice would you give them, or what words would you express to them in terms of, you know, looking to go to an Ivy League school as an opportunity to, you know, be impactful?
Yeah, I would tell them, for one, it takes a lot of sacrifice. Like, you want to do this, there's a lot of sacrifice that comes with it. And that's the main thing I really tell them, is just there's a lot of sacrifice and effort, too. Let me just stay disciplined. That's something I struggle with sometimes, being disciplined, getting up, wanting to go work, or getting your schoolwork done. So I feel like that's the main thing, staying disciplined, especially now in this world with the NIL and all the money that schools can give the players. I feel like a lot of players lose track of what the end goal is, which is to be a professional. And they get the NIL money, and they get the collective money, and they just become satisfied. They start buying clothes. Everybody want to wear fresh gear. I feel like that's just a distraction to, like, if you say you want to be a basketball player, you're gonna work. It don't matter where you at. Don't matter how much money you're getting. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's the main thing. So staying disciplined and being willing to sacrifice is the two main things.
That's real. Well, hey, Malik, we'll end it here, man. I really appreciate you giving us your time. Obviously, you know, it's amazing interviewing you right now. We're looking forward to the rest of your career. You killed it in just the short 6 months you played, and we're looking forward to what you do next. And definitely want to stay in contact and, you know, keep killing, keep putting on.
When you're done playing basketball, I got a whenever you want to be done playing basketball, that could be 10 years, 15 years, I got a couple jobs for you. Come find me.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, for sure.
No doubt, man. Keep doing your thing, man. Appreciate your time, man, and keep putting on.
Keep leading.
That's for real. No problem. Gotcha.
Yes. Don't get too tied up now, bro. Don't cross the line. You know?
I ain't get last time I got a tattoo was my senior year of high school. I ain't get one in college yet.
Okay, cool. Because so, dudes to get that Pell Grant and go hit the tattoo artist. It's like, bro, you need braces. You giving a you giving a dude all this money. You know what I mean? My teammates would go do that. Just spend everything. So enjoy that though, all right?
Yes, sir. Appreciate y'all.
Love, squad.
Yep, yep. Oh yeah. Tell Tommy there's a 16-year-old, 6'8", 160-pound cat.
Oh, yeah, he'll take him. Yeah, he'll come watch. I got you for sure. All
right, well, Stanford called, but I don't know what's going on in that situation. They got two guys transferred.
Yeah, Stojakovic is up out of there. Yeah, it don't look like it's a legacy school. You know what I mean?
All right, fam, you take care of yourself. Right. I know you got to get the class.
Yes, sir.
Love, bro.
Point. Forward.
So, Russell Westbrook is joining Target in building 180 affordable housing units for residents in his hometown of South Central LA. So dope. Westbrook announced his involvement in a project called Evermont that would bring 180 affordable housing units, a seed school, and a community center centered businesses to the corner of Vermont and Manchester Avenues in South LA. It's a Prime Star development. Will partner with Westbrook Enterprises to create a new retail center in the community that will include a Target and a South LA cafe. Bridge Housing and CRCD will be leading the development of 180 affordable housing units for seniors and families. And this is Russ saying, we have this platform, and me personally, I really pride myself on trying to be the face of Los Angeles when it comes to our community. I'm from LA, and I feel like it's my duty and my honor to give back to as many people as possible, especially the underserved communities of Los Angeles. I will do everything I can to make sure I continue to fill some of these gaps, whether it's education, whether it's finances, whether it's healthcare. Whatever that may be, I try my best to do the best that I can.
So I got a question. Actually, this is for sure where I wanted to take it. You see guys trying to do things like this compared to that of Derek Coleman back in the day when he tried to rebuild Detroit. Mm-hmm. Clearly, he lost his money trying to redo that.
Mm-hmm.
I always want to understand the story in between of why he wasn't successful and kind of the journey of how much NBA players are able to break out just being NBA players and having the support from their from their government to be able, or their community, to be able to do things like this to really affect. You know
what I'm saying? I think it's it's interesting times. Derek Coleman, D.C. situation was, I felt like it was just before the financial crisis, the housing crisis.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Right?
Yeah, he spent all his fortune trying to rebuild everything.
Try to rebuild it, and it's interesting that the owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers capitalized on it because he bought the entire downtown of Detroit for $1. Literally $1, but he promised
the factory,
$100 million,
worth of stuff,
and investing into the city and building buildings. But you just building, that's just an investment,
You just getting it back. You build. You basically are creating Sims. You basically did Sims.
Correct. And so I think over time, athletes, we try to learn from the past and see ways to be as provide, get as least risk as possible.
Use other people's money. The access to use other people's money.
Right. And in partnerships.
Everything.
And so Russ has always been at the forefront of that, whether it's Honor the Gift, his clothing line, the brand around that, and just giving back to the community. What he does at UCLA, he has the practice facility, and they have the weight room that they use there now. It's beautiful what he's doing for the city of LA. So we just wanted to touch on that real quick, just because it's interesting, a lot of the conversation you have around basketball players, and people don't understand the impacts. It's funny, I never
and put respect on his name. For 2 years, y'all was calling him Westbrook.
And
some of the people probably living in here was on that goofy stuff. So you understand what I'm saying? So not much of a combo, just another man stepping out, doing some superhuman stuff and giving back. But I always thought it's pretty cool when you hear stories about, the Derek Coleman situation and how far we came and pause 30 years to be able to jumpstart and get partnership to be able to build a vision.
Point. Forward.
Yo, what's up? Once again, we back with another segment of our favorite, one of our favorite segments, newer segments, mm-hmm. and it's called That's a Bar. It's nothing too crazy. We just go straight into, you know, what you guys been saying, some of the most popular people on the streets, and we kind of, you know, stamp it and be like, wow, that's valid. Mm-hmm. And this one is coming from one of our favorite Frenchmen, a potential face of the league. Mm-hmm. I'm joking.
The next face of the league.
The next face of the league, he already told us, but... Long story short, when he's being interviewed the other day about who will win Defensive Player of the Year, we're talking about Victor Wembanyama or Rudy Gobert, he said, I know that Rudy has a very good chance of winning it this year, and it would be deserved. Let him win it now, because after that, it's no longer his turn. That...
What you want me to say?
No, and I love the confidence, G, because I hate this stuff. Like, oh, no, this is really good. It's like, no, bro. But I've been busting buddy ass for like 2-3 years. Ask Rudy what he think, bro. Y'all compare me to... I'm waiting for him to say that. Like, stop. Don't compare me to Rudy no more. And Rudy's a legend in France. They're arguing he's the best French basketball player ever lived. Which is why I'm glad...
That's a hell of a compliment.
No, that's why I'm glad Wemby was born. So we won't have to live on an earth when we're big
fellas the best friend. Great player. He's, how many times he won Defensive Player of the Year?
3, but he's 7'4".
Exactly. So, you know, his body of work speaks for itself.
Yeah, he dunked it a couple times too, right?
Yeah, stop playing with him.
Point. Forward.
All right, so Curry Brand is signing University of South Carolina freshman guard Malaysia Fuwaili to a multi-year NIL deal. According to the company's announcement, the 5'10 freshman guard from Columbia, South Carolina, will wear Curry brand footwear on the court for the remainder of her Gamecocks playing days. Off the court, she will serve as a brand ambassador. Malaysia will receive support from Curry brand and Under Armour to further develop basketball in her hometown and continue the grassroots work she has already initiated in her community. So, I don't know if you watched the SEC tournament. It kind of got drowned out by the little fight between... I'm not a man of alpha females. I like that a little bit every now and then.
Flaw J Brother was wilding.
Flaw J Brother was wilding. And I'm going to be on shout. Whatevs. Them girls was too big for you, bro. For you to be jumping out there like, come on, bro. You better be lucky they ain't hit you for real. Like, man, get this little man up out of here.
I think they handled it well. The women handled it very well. Like, it wasn't going beyond what it was.
Yeah, and I think, shout out to, like, Dawn Staley, but I appreciated her at the end. Like, even just talking, like, no, it's fire. Like, sometimes, like, you don't want fights to occur, but at the same time, people are competing again after it. And obviously, throughout all, like, the hysteria, you know, it kind of got overshadowed with Malaysia. She's the first freshman to ever win, you know, the SEC Conference Tournament MVP.
It was tough.
Championship game, she had 24 points. Yeah. And what was pretty dope, we talked about her high school career back in Columbia, South Carolina.
She started playing varsity. 6 years of varsity basketball going back to the seventh grade.
For the seventh grade and won 4 state titles in 6 years. So she really about that life, fam. So I think one thing that would be dope if they do tell a crazy story, or being able to tell her story, it's going to look even better with her style of play. How she hoop, fam? She hoop like, remember on Space Jam? What was her name? When she ran Charles Barkley off the court.
It wasn't Lola the Bunny?
No, the hoop. When Charles Barkley was in the park and he was hooping, he's like, Go away.
Yeah.
That woman hooped at North Carolina, I forget her name, G. She had the coldest handle ever, and that's who Malaysia hoops like, fam. Just... on a string. I remember being in Shorty just watching her just play with the rock like the last minute of the game just on a string and like Malaysia behind the back, full speed, full court, crazy.
Now, crazy passes.
And you know, if Steph stamps you, that's thorough. And what he said was, when it comes to the ability to change the game for good, nobody can speak to that more than Malaysia. She's changing the women's game on the fly with how she plays and moves on the court. She has a unique style and flow to her game that I don't think many people have seen in a long, long time. I'm humbled that she's now part of the family. That's big time, bro.
It is. That's what's up.
Point. Forward.
Yo, actually, you've been going kind of viral recently.
Yeah, I don't know. I went viral because people can't read. You know, like, and I'm almost to the point where.
I went viral because motherfuckers. I'm almost I hope they read this.
No, I'm at the point now where I'm just like. I see how people see themselves above other people. And I always try to be humble about things and show a sense of humility. But at some point, like, Because it's like, do y'all, can y'all not read or can you not listen?
It's like you want to have a Kwame Brown moment. See, this is your problem. You don't get it because you stupid.
You know what I mean? No, I'm.
Yeah.
And Bogut and Andrew Bogut, shout out to my guy.
Yeah.
He tweeted yesterday, or he tweeted the other day. He was like, this is exactly what Andre was talking about when he said who's the most feared at the end of a game.
Yeah.
And so it's not about who's better than who or this or that. In one particular moment, I'm stating what I know because I've seen it.
Yeah.
And so for the response to be what it is sometimes, I'm just like, I'm getting to the point where I'm about to, like, the way that people are voicing themselves at me feels like an attack. I'm almost ready to be like, listen, dog, like, I will give you my address. Please, please pull up on me with that energy. Please.
Damn, you at that level? You weren't like that in Philly.
Fam, it is getting crazy. Because it'd be like people in the Bay. I'm like, those would be the worst fans.
Oh, really?
Those are like the worst fans.
Yeah, no,
it's like fans who don't know anything about basketball until their team starts winning. Then they're a fan now.
But the irony of all this, that's the result of being the face of the NBA, though. If you think, like, we call Brian sexual, you got the Steph. Like, you say anything about Steph, it's like people hunting you up and down. Like, you better not ever say that again. Like, I guess that's the thing.
But I love to be proved right, so thank you.
And low-key, say what y'all want, bro. I was trying to cause some hate on that, bro. Kyrie, it literally rotated perfectly. Like, he came out the corner, paused at 2.8. Hezzy real quick, like he's going to shoot the three. Yeah. Dude's on his right hand. He literally does a run, not this way towards rim, that way. Bro, the ball literally rotated like he shot it like a jimmy, like a jumper, bro. It was crazy. And with that being said, prior to that big-time shot, Kyrie had the crazy mind of just putting out publicly that he wanted to play for Team USA in Paris because, you know, I think he probably thinks he's a top 12 player, and that's what you usually do. And he is.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm being dead serious. So, I think when that came out the other day, Paul, a lot of people are just kind of like, I guess. But it's like, no, we're talking about if you're going to send your best over.
We ain't going to lose.
We're not going to. That's all I'll say.
We ain't going
to
lose.
We're not going to lose at all. And, like, shout out to Tyrese Haliburton and all them other young dudes, man. Y'all got to get out the way, G. Like, I want to see Steph. I want to see Kyrie. I want to see Dame. They're my three guards.
All the guards.
They're my three guards I want to see. All right.
Drew gonna make the team.
Oh, damn. All right. Drew, you're gonna have to play the two. D Book, you gotta stay at the crib because we're gonna have Anthony Edwards coming. Pause.
It's tough this year.
First off, this is a grand stage for Anthony Edwards. Like, he the only one crazy enough to, like, outshine everybody. Like, how Melo used to, like.
He ain't lying.
Yeah, how Melo used to be packed in and everything.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, how you have, like, teams with, like, the 2012 team with Brian, all them. Like, Melo would still come out and go break records, go get 20. Like,
let's in scoring.
Yeah, like, let in scoring. Like,
or the KD lead us in scoring.
Man, Melo. It's hard. Melo broke a couple, like, records during that day. And it was, like, he was the fifth option somehow. And it was, like, it was still impressive. He was able to still show his skill set. Yeah. And it wasn't. Yeah. People remember Melo, but they kind of would just X him out of them Olympic, like, the hierarchy in that sense, in my personal opinion. But when we're talking about Kyrie Irving, we can't forget right now for Paris, his international competition resume is he won an Olympic gold medal in 2016. He won a World Cup gold medal in 2014. You said that's the best tournament to really play in, correct?
Yeah, get cracking over there.
And then when he was 18, he won a 2010 FIBA Americas game. But in 2014, he was.
And in 2010, y'all saw what he did to the 2012, y'all saw what he did to that team in practice.
Kobe and them. RIP Kobe.
I was watching.
And in 2014, he was USA Basketball Male Athlete of the Year, the most valuable player of the 2014 FIBA Basketball World Cup, and a member of the FIBA Basketball World Cup, you know, all tournament team. Mm-hmm. So he basically were all world. That was lit. To be able to be called all world was just probably easier to do than, like, be all NBA.
That's true.
But I feel like my arrogance will want to be like, yo, all-world guard Evan Turner. Like, you know what I mean? like, you know? But what do you think as a former player? It's like, do you think he deserves to get there? And How do you think if he does go out there, what would his reputation be? Do you think he would get a lot of flack from what occurred a couple years ago?
Kyrie, I won't speak on Kyrie forever ever again. I just do know that they won't lose if he's on the team.
Point Forward.
That's a wrap. Another episode of Point Forward. Huge thanks to Malik and all of you for tuning in. Remember, the conversation doesn't end here. Follow Point Forward on social media to continue the discussion and get a sneak peek of what's coming up next.